So I'm going to bring in Gary Ewan Park to our next speaker. Hi, Gary. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Thank you.
Yeah, so you're joining us from a little bit further north of me, aren't you? You're in Scotland, just north of Aberdeen, I believe.
That's right, yeah. So up in Aberdeen, just outside Aberdeen, but yeah, up in Scotland, yeah.
Perfect. Oh, Scotland's one of my favourite places. I was there 2 weeks ago, but that's by the by. You are doing another favourite thing. Your talk title is called A Piece of Cake. Now, I'm very much Indeed. Into cake. I love cake, like the edible kind. I'm saying yes. Here.
Unfortunately, there's no edible cake in this talk, unfortunately.
So, what? Oh, no, my goodness. The cake is a lie.
The cake is indeed a lie today, yes.
So you are talking about C-sharp powered cross-platform build automation. Oh, I can't say it. Automation. I want to say automation. So without further ado, I'm going to hand it over to you. Let me bring in your screen and hand over to you, Gary. And remember, if you have questions for Gary, make sure you tag it with the hashtag .NETConf and Gary's Twitter handle, which is there underneath Gary's picture. And with that, over to you.
Thank you very much. So yes, as Leila mentioned, we're here to talk about the C-sharp powered cross-platform build automation tool that is known as Cake. Now, before we get into exactly what Cake is, I want to make sure that we all are on the same page with regard to what a build is, because unfortunately, the term build is a little bit of a overloaded term. So I just want to draw a line in the sand and make sure that we're all talking about the same thing. So what I'm referring to when I'm talking about a build is really the one of the core components of that is the compilation step. So that's where you are taking your source codes, whether it's C#, whether it's TypeScript, whatever language it is, then inherently you have a compile step. That's sometimes known as the build. But in this context, what I'm referring to is the larger portion of that, which is the build workflow that we're attempting to achieve. So in terms of .NET ecosystem, in order to do a compilation, you also need to typically do a package restore. So you'd be using NuGet restore or .NET restore to bring in those external dependencies that you need in order for your compilation to succeed. Related to that, tangentially, there is typically a clean step within a build process. So that's where you are cleaning up the artifacts of your build so that you can ensure that every time you run the build, you've got something that's repeatable, that is reliable, and is maintainable. So you need to clean up the artifacts as part of that build so that the next time you run the build, essentially the exact same thing happens again. So once we've got all of these things in place, typically you would be doing some unit testing. So you want to make sure that the code that you are writing is actually doing what you expect it to do. And that's typically done with some unit testing framework, whether it's XUnit, NUnit, or something else. On top of that, you may then look to add in some test coverage metrics so that you can see whether your code coverage is going up or down, depending on whether you're adding in new functionality into your application. And that's a metric that you can use to, over time, make sure that things are progressing the way you want it to. Once you've got all of those things in place, you will typically package up the application. So whether that is it wrapping it up as a NuGet package or as a chocolatey package or as a .NET global tool, or it's a website that you want to deploy somewhere, you need to package that up and put it somewhere. And then once you've got it in a place where you can put it somewhere, ultimately you will publish it. So you'll publish it to NuGet.org or NPM repository, or you'll host it on an Azure website. Wherever it goes, it's part of potentially your overall build workflow. And then contained within all of that, you might want to add in something like static code analysis. So again, as your project is maturing, you want to make sure that the code base is in a good state. So you might want to use something like StyleCop or add in some ROS analyzers so that you know that the build, that what you're compiling is exactly the way you want it to be. So the maintenance of that project becomes easier over time. So what I'm describing here is a typical build workflow. Your build workflow might be different, but essentially all of these steps and also some potentially some additional steps is what I refer to as the build. And what Cake is it's a build orchestration tool. It is a mechanism that will allow you to stitch all of those different components together in an organized way. So what we saw within that chart, essentially that graph that we drew, we saw that there were some dependencies. We saw that before you could run the unit tests, you have to run the build. Before you run the build, you have to do the restore. So those dependencies within that graph are something that Cake will help to orchestrate. So Cake as a project is open source. It's available on GitHub. It's been around since about 2014. Now, full disclaimer, I am a maintainer of that Cake project. I've been working on it since around late 2015. It is a cross-platform tool, meaning that it will work on Windows, Mac, and Linux. It's also cross-environment. So what I mean by that is you can run Cake locally, or you can run it on your premises within your organization. You can run it on containers. It'll run pretty much everywhere that you would want it to. It's also cross-service. So what that means is if you want to run it on Azure DevOps, or you want to run it on AppVeyor, you want to run it on CircleCI, you want to run it on Team City, you can anywhere that you can run .NET, you can run Cake as well. It's also cross-runtime. So what I mean by that is it has runners for .NET Framework, it has runners for Mono, it has runners for .NET Core, and also .NET Global Tools as well. So it'll run cross-runtime. Now, at its heart, Cake is a scripting engine. So we will be writing a Cake script. So what we add on top of that is a C# DSL that allows for ease of execution of certain things that we want to do as part of our build process. So the question that naturally comes up is, well, where can I install Cake from? So Cake as a project has it's been around for a little while now. So we've gone through some different iterations in terms of .NET. So whether it's full framework .NET, whether it's .NET Core, and now with .NET 5 coming into play. So there's different packages that you can use. But up on NuGet, you will find the Cake project Cake package, which is the cake.exe. So that'll run on .NET Framework and on Mono. There is also a cake.tool. So that's the .NET Global Tool implementation of Cake. If you are still using .NET Core 2, then that's where the cake.core CLR package would come into play, and you could use that. There's also cake.frosting. So what I'm going to be showing here today is the scripting implementation of Cake. But if you prefer to run your builds as a full console application, then that's where cake.frosting would come into play. If you're on Windows and you want to install Cake globally on your machine, then you can absolutely do that with a chocolate package that is cake.portable. If you're on a Mac and, again, you want to have Cake installed globally, then there is a Homebrew package that you can use. Or depending on your environment, you can then use, we create a number of Docker containers where you can bring that into your build process with one of those containers. So in terms of getting started with Cake, what we recommend now is making use of the .NET Global Tool version of Cake. That's where we recommend folks get started. So the way that you do that, if you were wanting to add Cake onto a new project, what you would do is you would walk up and you would create a new tool manifest file. And into that tool manifest file, you would then say, I want to install the cake.net global tool. And then with that in play and that manifest file checked into your repository, you're then pinning that build to a specific version of Cake. So again, that due diligence is then saying, I'm installing a specific version, so I know that that build is going to be repeatable and maintainable and resilient over time. So once you've got all of those pieces in play, when you add it to a CI server or when you run it locally, you would run .NET Tool Restore, and then you would run .NET Cake, and that is what will then, that finishes the bootstrapping process, so we're then ready to use Cake as part of our build automation. So what we want to do today is we want to attempt to build something with Cake. So I've got a very simple application that is just a very, very simple .NET class library that gets packaged up into a NuGet package. Got some unit tests for that library. And then we also ship that as a .NET global tool. So what I'm going to try to achieve, it's a short demonstration today in terms of time. So I'm going to take that original overall build workflow and I'm going to condense that down into just looking at a few constituent parts. So specifically the five that I'm showing here. So with that, I'm going to switch over to a demo. So what I've got here is this is VS Code. And in here, I have that solution that I spoke about. I have the class library, I have the unit test that is exercising that class library, and then I have the .NET global tool that we want to ship. So ultimately, at the end of this, what I want to do is I want to have a full build that will generate those packages ready for me to publish them somewhere. Okay, so to save a little bit of time, what I did prior to this is I've already run those steps I mentioned in that slide. So I've already run the created the tool manifest file, and I've already installed Cake into this project. So if I run .NET Cake here and passing in the info, then I'm going to get some ASCII art, because everyone needs ASCII art in their lives. But what I'm showing here is that we're just using, I am actually using the RC version of Cake. It's the one that we've literally just shipped in the last few days with full support for C# 9 as well as .NET 5. So that's what we've got here. So the only thing I need to do to get started with this build process is I need a build.cake file, or a.NET Cake file. You can call it whatever you want. A convention is to call it build.cake. So what I need to do here is, in order to get started with a Cake build, I need an entry point. And typically that comes in the form of a target argument that you would pass into Cake on the command line. So what we're using here is a Cake scripting alias called argument, and it's going to do the hard work of taking that argument from the command line, bringing it in, and making it available within my script. So once I have that, I can run another alias here that is just called run target. So what this is doing is it's setting up Cake so that we can run some tasks. Now I have control over which tasks that I can run, and I can, what I'm going to do now is I'm going to start stubbing out that graph, that dependency graph that we spoke about before. So the way I'm going to do that is I'm going to start creating some tasks here. So I'm just going to give them some names. I'm just going to represent them as strings. So the first task that I'm going to look at is a clean task. Then I want to, I'm just going to stub out, I'm going to put placeholders in for all of the tasks essentially. So I've got a restore task. Then I'm going to have a my build task was next, so I'm going to put that in. Then I'm going to have my test task, which was the unit test task. And then the final one that was in the chart that we showed was the package task. Now, what I did up here in line one was I said that if there wasn't a argument passed at the command line when I invoke Cake, then I want to run the default target. So that wasn't shown in the graph that I showed before, but I'm going to add this in, and this is going to be my top level default task. So if a target isn't specified, that's the one that's going to be executed. So to get this started, what I need to do is I need to start putting in play those dependencies between each of these tasks. So the way I can do that is I can go down here and I can say is dependent on, and I can give that the name of the task that I want to execute. Now, this is a string representation of that task. Now, this is essentially a magic string. It's not ideal sometimes. So certainly what you can do is if you want to create a named version of a task, I can just create a variable here and say that this is the package task. So I can replace that down here with just, if I can learn how to type, I can create that as package task. So what I'm doing there is I'm creating a dependency between that default task and that package task. So at the minute, we're not actually doing anything. We're not doing anything as part of this Cake script. I'm just setting the foundations there to allow us to start executing tasks. So if I walk up here and I say run Cake again, what it's going to do is I haven't provided a target argument, so it's going to run Cake with the default target. And because of this dependency here, I can see that I'm running the default task and I'm also running that package task. So if I just run through and create the rest of these dependencies, so I'm going to say it is dependent on and test. Again, I could make them variables rather than using strings, but I'll just carry on with this at the minute. So I'm going to say the test task is going to be dependent on the build task. And the build task is actually dependent on two things. So I want to be able to say is dependent on here. I want to say that that's dependent on my clean. And I want to say is dependent on my restore. So with all of those things in play, we've essentially created that full dependency graph. It's actually known as a directed acyclical graph, if you want to get the technical term. But what Cake's going to do is it's going to ensure that it's going to execute each of those tasks exactly once, and it's going to execute them in the order that the dependency describes. So if I run .NET Cake again, it's not doing anything yet. It's just laying the groundwork for having all of these run in order. and I've clearly got a error that I have is dependent on task build, which does not exist. I have a typo. I've got a double L. I saw it. So obviously, this is a strongly typed language. So when you get an error, there is an error in your code. This particular error would have been highlighted by the fact if I had used my tasks definition for each one. But right now, what I'm doing is I'm going to show if I run now, the default task is dependent on package. Package is dependent on test. So I'm now running all of those tasks in order. If there was a specific task that I wanted to run, let's say I wanted to run the test task again and again, because I'm iterating over my unit test and I want to run just the test task, then I can specify that as a target argument. And now I'm no longer running a package. I'm going to run just the test and all of its dependencies. But if I wanted to run literally just the test task without running any of its dependencies, I can pass in another argument that is the exclusive argument. And what that will do is it will run just the test task and none of its dependencies. So what I'm showing here is that the cake allows for different entry points. So depending on what your CI system looks like or what your local build process is like, you may want to be able to run one task, or in if you're doing a build process, or you might want to separate that as have a separate deploy pipeline. You can absolutely do that within the same cake script. So now that I've got all of these pieces in play, I want to start actually doing some work. So what I'm going to do here is Cake provides another method that I can call, which is the does method. And that's just a lambda where I can actually do some work. So what I'm doing here is I want, and this is my restore task. I actually want to run .NET restore at the command line, and I want to pass in the solution file so that it can restore all the required packages. So what I'm going to want to do is I'm going to want to create a solution folder so that I can instruct Cake on where that locates. I could do this in line, but this is the kind of thing that I might want to use in multiple places. So I'll define it as a variable. So in my restore task, I can then do .NET core. And what we'll see here is we've got full IntelliSense. Although it's C-sharp is a, although Cake is a C-sharp DSL, within the VS Code extension, we've got full support for IntelliSense through OmniSharp, which is also running within VS Code. So what I can do here is I can use the .NET Core Restore alias, so I can find out what needs to be done here. So it needs the root folder that where it wants to do the restore on. So that's just gonna be my solution folder. So I'm gonna give it that, and I'm gonna save that. So if I go back down to the command line here and I say run my restore task, what we should actually find now is that the restore task will run. It doesn't have any dependencies, so it's going to run by itself. But what it will now do is it will invoke .NET at the command line, and it's going to run .NET restore. So we're seeing that all the packages, all the projects are up to date, so there was nothing for it to restore. Obviously, I did this as just before the demo, so those weren't required to actually do anything. But it did actually attempt it. So going down the tree a little bit, we can then create a does method for the build task. So I'm going to create a lambda here again. But in here, I'm going to look to do something else. So there was a .NET core restore alias. So it kind of goes without saying that there's a .NET core build alias that we can run as well. So what it needs is it needs the solution folder as well for what it's going to be building. But what I want to be able to do here is I want to be able to control more granular the things that .NET build command is actually going to be doing. So what I can use here is the .NET Core build settings class. So this is a strongly typed class that allows us to set the different parameters that you would ultimately have to know what they are on the command line. So the one that I'm interested in just now is the no restore option. So I'm going to set that to true. The reason I'm going to set that to true is because within this build workflow that I'm creating here, I've already done the restore. So by default, running .NET build will actually do a restore for us as well. But we actually don't want it to do that because we've taken ownership of that. We own that part of the build pipeline, or the build workflow rather, so we don't want it to happen here. So I'm going to go ahead and save that, and I'm going to run the build task this time. The build task has a dependency on restore, so that will be invoked as part of this process. So what we'll see happen is that the clean, we're not doing anything in the clean yet, but we will run the restore again, and we will run the build. So we'll see the build complete. This is obviously a demo project, so there's no projects problems with it. It will build, and it will build successfully. So we're starting to stub out this process now. We're getting a full build workflow starting to be created. So I can go one step further. So the next one after that was the test project. So I'm just going to borrow the code from above, because again, it stands to reason that if there is a .NET Core build, then there will be a .NET Core test, and there will be a .NET Core test settings class as well. So in the same way that we did before, I want to augment this process slightly. So I want to say, I want to use the no build option, because for the same reason that I didn't want to run the restore as part of my build task, I also don't want to run the build as part of the test task, because I've owned that process all the way through the build. So I'm going to change this to be the test task. Again, just to labor the point a little bit, that dependency graph is going to be met. Test is dependent on build. Build is dependent on store and restore and clean. So each of those are going to be done each time that I run the build. So again, it's making sure that we've got a repeatable, reliable, and resilient build that we can then ultimately put into our source control, because this build.cake file will just live within your source control and it will evolve over time as you need to add more functionality to it. So what we see here in the output is that we ran all of our unit tests, all of them passed, so we're ready to move on to the next stage. So the next stage was the packaging of this application. So again, I'm just going to borrow the what we did before, just for the sake of time, because again, there's a .NET Core test task alias, but there is a .NET Core pack, and there is a .NET Core pack settings. So again, same reasoning before, don't want to do the store, don't want to do the build, but I also want to control where those packages are created. So I can go back up to the top here, and I can say I'm going to create an output folder. And then in there, I'm just going to call this artifacts. I'm going to use this output folder as a new property within the .NET Core pack settings. So I'm going to set the output directory is going to be to my output folder. With that in play, I'll just kick that off, and then we can start talking about what it's doing. So we're going to run package, and I'm going to minimize this so we can see it. I'm changing the entry point to be my package task at that point. So it's going to do that full dependency tree is going to be met, clean, restore, build, test, etc. But what we'll see happen differently this time around is it will create an artifacts folder, and that artifacts folder will be populated with the NuGet package that is our class library, and it's also going to be populated with the .NET Global Tool package that we could then push up to NuGet.org so that people could install it when they need it. So what we'll see is it's created an artifacts folder, and it's put those two nutcakes in there, which is exactly what we wanted to do. However, the output directory here was created by virtue of the fact that .NET Core Pack happens to create that folder. But in order to have a fully reliable build, we need to own that as part of our workflow as well. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back and I'm going to populate this task that we left up here, which is the clean task. So in here, I'm going to just create another function. And in here, I'm going to use another one of the cake aliases, which is the clean directory alias. So what I can do here is I can pass in a path to a folder that I want to have cleaned as part of my build process. So I'm just going to go ahead and save that, and I'm going to change this to be the clean task down here. Because what this is going to do is there's two kind of inherent operations within the clean directory alias. The first is that it will clean the artifact folder. So every time it runs, it will empty that folder. But more importantly is if I go ahead and delete it and I run the clean target again, then it's also going to ensure that that folder actually exists. So rather than relying on the .NET Core pack command to actually create the artifacts folder, we've owned that as part of our overall build workflow. So with that done, the final thing to do really is just remove the target that we were invoking there and just invoke the default target. And what we'll see is for our entire build workflow happening again. It's run the clean, it runs the restore, the build, the test, and the package. So hopefully what you can see here is with very little work, I was able to create a build script I was able to invoke it using the command line, and then I was able to step through that build workflow to have everything work for me. Now, one thing that is nice to be able to do when you're writing C-sharp is nice to be able to debug your code. And that's exact same thing within a C-sharp build automation tool. I want to be able to debug it to make sure that things are working the way that I want it to. So all I've done here is I've just put a breakpoint on my clean task here. And I'm just going to hit F5 within Visual Studio Code. So what that's going to do is it's going to launch Cake in a debuggable mode, which means I can step into the code. So what we should see is that this breakpoint will be hit in this clean directory because it's the first thing that gets done as part of the build process. And then here I've got the full sort of debug experience within Visual Studio Code. I can set watches. I can see what variables are set. So that allows me to figure out what's going on with a build, then to be able to see what's going on. So in terms of demo, that was all I had. But why I'm going to jump back to my slides here and say that just a final couple of points with regard to extending Cake. So what I've shown in this demo is a very, very quick overview of the built-in features, the built-in aliases that exist within Cake. But if you wanted to have additional functionality, then we have a community of folks who have added additional aliases into Cake. One of those, for example, is cake.twitter. If you wanted to send a tweet when your publishing cycle is finished, you can absolutely do that by with using the add-in preprocessor directive. So that will bring in the cake.twitter package, again, pinned to a specific version so you have a repeatable, maintainable build. But that will allow you to have another alias that is send tweet. You can also extend Cake in the sense of creating new reusable scripts. So I created that build.cake file there. But if I find myself doing the same thing over and over and over again, I can create a collection of Cake scripts and then package them up as a NuGet package. And that's what we've done here within cake.recipe. Cake.recipe is a very opinionated set of build scripts, but it can be reused over multiple projects. Cake.recipe is actually used across over 100 different add-ins in the Cake Contrib GitHub organization. But it's the same build running multiple places, but if we need to update it, we update it once and then push out a new version, and then we pull that into those projects for them to build. The final one is modules. So pretty much everything in Cake is written in such a way that it is using dependency injection. So if there's something in there that you didn't like or you wanted to augment slightly, you can absolutely change that through the creation of a module. So if you wanted to change how Cake does logging, you can change that by creating a module that interfaces with that. This particular one that I'm showing here is the cake.npm module. So if you wanted to install a tool using the npm package manager, then you can absolutely do that in a consistent way that we install tools otherwise with Cake. So with that, I'm going to say thanks for joining. I wanted to make sure to leave a couple of minutes for questions at the end there. So I'm going to hand back to Layla to see if there are any questions. If you do need to reach out to me, I'm pretty much GEP13 everywhere on the internet. So reach out to me on Twitter and GitHub, and I'll answer your questions from there.
That was great, Gary. Thank you so much. I've not seen Cake in action before, so it was really interesting. We have had so many questions. I don't think we're going to get through all of them, but okay. Let's start. Oh, they've all shuffled around. I've lost them. So people want to know where your slides are and your library. I take it you could share that on Twitter for us.
I can definitely do that. Yeah, I've got a GitHub repo that has both of those things in it. Yeah.
Perfect. Let's have a look at this one. Which .NET versions are now supported? If .NET 4.8 is not supported, how to use Cake Build within it?
So there's a couple of aspects there. So I just want to make sure that we're talking about the same thing. So the version of .NET that you use to run Cake isn't contingent on what you're actually trying to build. So if you're trying to build a .NET 5 project or a .NET 4.8 project, you don't have to use the same .NET framework version to actually run Cake. Cake could still be running an older version of the framework, but you can still orchestrate the execution of the specific versions of MS Build that you needed to for your project. So they're not inherently coupled. It kind of makes sense to have them both the same, but they don't need to be. So the answer is pretty much anything that you can do within Cake.
Great. So this is an interesting one. Why cake instead of automated builds with TFS or Team Foundation Services?
Server? Yep. So this is a good question. There's a good chance. It's a great question. I mean, the main benefit of using something like cake, or I mean, there are other systems out there. Cake is just one of them. It's the one that I would obviously prefer that you use because I'm a maintainer of the project. But the benefit of these projects is that you're not then coupling yourself. You're not getting vendor lock-in to something like TFS or Azure DevOps or TeamCity or whatever. So you're writing it in a way that the build automation goes with the repository. So you can run the same build as you locally as you run on TeamCity. And if for some reason you then change from TeamCity to another hosting platform, you have the opportunity to make that switch without having to rebuild everything in another way of doing things. So when you run a cake build in Azure DevOps, it's a one-liner, it's run cake. You do the exact same thing in TeamCity, it's a one-liner, run cake. So that's kind of the main reason for doing that.
That's great. Well, there are a lot of questions for you to go and answer now on Twitter, Gary. Because there's a lot. Thank you so much. That was a really good overview. And it's definitely made me want to go and see if I can have a play and figure some stuff out. I'm not very good at that type of stuff. So automating it would be really helpful. So thank you so much for spending some time with us. And have a great rest of your day.
Same to you. Thank you for having me. Bye-bye.
Cheerio. Bye.